Hi everybody, welcome to this next edition of Making Waves here on LakeChelanNow.com. Dennis Rahm along with
Steve Bykus with you today.
And Steve, happy holidays to everybody, because man, we're in the midst of it right now.
Tis the time of the year.
We're going to talk about some of the things that have transpired up to this point, going back to Thanksgiving, actually. But want to make mention, we're going to have a guest on our program later today, and it is the head of the Department of Natural Resources for the state of Washington. She also serves as the Public Lands Commissioner. We are talking about Hillary Franz, and Hillary's been a guest on this program in the past. One of the things that's kind of cool, I think, about Hillary as the head of the DNR, Steve, is she is out there. She really puts herself out there in a number of different ways, and it's interesting to see her use of social media, for example, between tweeting and Facebook Lives, just Instagram, all the other forms. It's pretty obvious what's going on in the world of Hillary Franz.
She's out there, I think, to raise, I guess, the level of exposure, awareness for the Department of Natural Resources and what it is they do. Multifaceted agency, amongst other things, charged with trying to create some income for the state of Washington to fund the Common School Construction Fund. However, getting there from here is always problematical, and a situation where she has to have a higher profile. The agency has to have a higher profile to extract the amount of money that they might be needed from the state legislature to do such things as take care of public lands from a wildfire threat situation.
Yeah, and I think that's the area that many people relate her job to. It's not the only thing, as you talked about,
but
it's certainly one that's in the forefront of things. As a matter of fact, Steve, as you know, we were able to catch up with Hillary on the road in Washington, D.C., talking to federal folks, because they're also trying to get continuity and collaboration between the state and the feds, particularly as it pertains to wildland fires. We obviously are well aware of what happened recently in California and the fire problems we have up here in the Pacific Northwest. So it's not just an isolated thing. And there are many cases where it's not just state lands we're talking about. It's federal lands where they have these issues with wildland fires.
Federal lands adjacent to such communities as Leavenworth, which is the highest on their list for communities that could be threatened by fire. Nonetheless, it's still state involvement in that, you know, the agencies do try to manage forests collectively and do, certainly when it comes to fire, both have to show up. And, it's a it's multifaceted agency and dynamic gal to see her profile publicly, to create that awareness that we talked about, and to be able to apply some political pressure to extract the money that she believes she needs from the state legislature, upcoming session the first of next year.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, she's got an ask for $55 million, and she'll talk about that with us, Steve. And, but she's very willing to answer questions, which I find out also
refreshing.
Yes, refreshing from someone in a high-profile position like that, including we talk a little bit about global warming. And as you know, it's been a hot topic in the news, and there are those that say global warming really does not exist. She's not in that camp. She thinks it certainly does, and as a matter of fact, is going to be putting a plan into place.
The global warming issue is, yeah, right. There are two camps diametrically opposed.
Looking forward to the conversation with Hillary, talking a number of different topics, including that report that you mentioned, Steve, on the communities that are listed high as being susceptible to wildland fires. No surprise to any of us that live here. Leavenworth, you mentioned, was number one. Chelan was number six. Wenatchee was higher than Chelan. And then if you go through the top 18, you talk about communities like Tenasket and Omak and Winthrop. They're all there.
Some of those communities that are higher on the list have lost a green buffer, a buffer space around them, as orchards have tended to go away, particularly the case in Manson, to some extent is a little more exposed than it used to be. And some of the other communities that are high on the list have the same situation. You lose that buffer zone around it, and then you're more susceptible to fire invading.
Should be fun. We'll visit with Hillary Franz of the DNR and Public Lands Commissioner here in a little bit. But, Steve, it's the holiday season. We kind of started out with that. And, you know, what a joyous time. I think small town communities really get it, really know how to embrace the holidays. A little less artificial maybe than some of the big cities and some of the goings-on that happen there. And before we talk Christmas, because we can do that now because we're post-Thanksgiving, I want to go back a little bit to Thanksgiving. First off, I know you had a great time. You had a bunch of family and friends gathered up, so hopefully that was a nice day for you.
All went well.
Good, good, good. I happened to go to, and my family, the Apple Cup for their annual Thanksgiving, community Thanksgiving that they put together, where they serve upwards of 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 people between in the restaurant itself and meals that they delivered. And you know, it's great to see this transition happen from, it was initially started, it was a dream of Larry Peterson when he bought the Apple Cup many, many years ago, 22, 23 years ago, and he put it together, he and his wife at that time, and they put this community event together. Now, Ryan Peterson, the son, a few years back purchased the Apple Cup. He has kept this tradition going, and it's really a cool thing to see it, and I had been absent from it for a while. Came back. I remember, you remember the days when we'd broadcast live from the community Thanksgiving at the Apple Cup Cafe. So went down there, took a lot of photos, talked to a lot of people, and it was just fun to kind of, it was almost like deja vu feeling and going back and experiencing that type of thing. So great that they're still doing that at the Apple Cup Cafe. Kudos to the Peterson family. And man, it's not just for people maybe that don't have any other recourse for a meal, but it's also for people that just that live here and want to get together in one location.
Yeah, the whole thing, and we were in on it in the beginning, I guess, and have watched it grow, and it has become a social gathering spot. It may have started out as a thank you from the Petersons to the community, but also to help feed folks who may not have that Thanksgiving meal with all the trimmings, and it's turned into something more than that. And it's certainly been highlighted not only locally in the press, but also has gotten some significant regional coverage, and it's just good to see the whole thing continuing. It's fun. I didn't make it this year because we had a tribe, but nonetheless, it's just fun to go up there and participate. Whether it is your eating or clearing tables or doing dishes or what we've done, all of those, it's just fun.
Yeah. Well, you may, and that's a good point because it's a collaborative effort.
You bet.
Not just, certainly they are the ones that allow it to happen, the Apple Cup and the Peterson family and all their employees, but the majority of the workers there are all volunteers. Mm-hmm. They do it in a couple of different shifts. The turkeys are supplied by Cisco Foods. And I think they did 42 or 44 turkeys this year. Franz supplies the buns, the rolls, the dinner rolls and whatnot. So, everybody comes together and puts this together. I know Ryan Peterson, he was busy a day or two before at the Eagles cooking turkeys.
Right. They use Eagles, they have a huge commercial kitchen upstairs, and they can accommodate certainly more than one or two turkeys at a time. So that,
can you imagine trying to do onesies?
Well, actually, it's hard for the Apple Cup to do it while they're serving on the couple days before. They kind of have to go out someplace else. There's no better spot than the Eagles for the size of the commercial kitchen that they have upstairs there.
Mm-hmm. So congratulations to the Apple Cup Cafe, and job well done. And it was great to see everybody out there yet again at another Thanksgiving celebration. Then we transition right out of that, Steve, into the Friday after, where Black Friday, some people call it. Others refer to it differently than Black Friday. So we'll talk about the activities, because I think more locally here, even though there were shops opened up early that day for sales events and whatnot, it really began the celebration of Christmas here in the Lake Chelan Valley. And it is a small town Christmas. They're calling it this year in Chelan. In the evening, they had the Children's Lighted Parade. I was down there for that. That was really cool. And Santa came rolling into town, and Mrs. Claus, I might say, on the fire truck, We'll talk about Santa this year. He's kind of a cool guy because he gets to ride in fire trucks, gets to ride in helicopters, you know. He's got it going, certainly. And so the Chelan Small Town Christmas, that happened all on Friday, and then the celebrations continued and will, by the way, up through Christmas. There are a number of activities going on in both Chelan and Manson, and you can check out their respective chamber websites or the HDCA website as well in Chelan, the Historic Downtown Chelan Association, and get detailed schedules of all the activities for the holidays. But I wanted also to mention in Manson on Saturday, was down there for that. A lot of fun as Santa Claus arrived via
helicopter.
Yeah, pretty cool thing.
Thank you, Dale.
Yeah, just before noon, he and Mrs. Claus again, they were there hand in hand, and they were greeted by a nice gathering of folks out there in Leffler Field. So it was great to see that. And Steve, this will be a topic for another day, but there is a move afoot by the Manson Chamber to purchase Leffler Field. You're pretty familiar with that spot. They do a lot of things in Manson. On that plot of ground, it would be nice to preserve it.
Yes, it would. It's used by community, I don't want to say nonstop, but certainly for various events, and it would be nice, yes, to leave that as an open space, a green space, a space for the carnival to come in and to use during hydroplane up there for camping folks. The church uses it often when they have a youth gathering. They put the campers in the tents and those kinds of things there.
Rat rods.
Yeah, the rat rod deal. Yeah, so it's used a lot, and it would be nice to be able to keep that space available for community.
And as I understand it, the plan is to try and raise revenue and look for other maybe grants available as well to keep it as an open space for the community, and then likely turn it over to Manson Park and Recreation to operate the property.
All of that is to unfold over time. Funding, of course, is follow the bucks.
Yes, indeed. But at least, you know, they've got a line on it, and they're working towards that goal. And we'll have more on it because there's some things I think are going to be starting here in the very near future.
You mentioned Manson, and I've got to say that, and they still are working on it as we speak, but we drove through Manson last evening, frankly, and unbelievable job in putting together the decorations and lights this year. It is amazing. I had to go up and down the street a couple, three times to go, whoa, I can't, this is new. Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, it was an enjoyable experience just to take a little drive.
Yeah, they're certainly doing a good job on that. Also, Steve, some things that have happened of late. This one, very recent. North Cascades Highway, Highway 20, officially closed now as of Wednesday, November the 28th for the winter season.
Seasonal event. And now everybody will be going, gosh, we got to get it open for Apple Blossom. We got to get it open for the, what's the name of the Western
49ers days
in Winthrop, those kinds of things. I'm going, opening of fishing's coming to anywhere. Are we going to get the highway open? So, we'll look forward to that discussion here in a few months.
And then I'm guessing those up in the Medhow Valley is like, okay.
Yeah, really. Deep sigh.
A little quieter for a while,
yes,
for a few
for a
months.
Yeah.
All right. So, yes, that highway officially closed. And then lastly, I just want to thank those that came out as Lake Chelan now partnered up with Campbell's for a Joe Harris watch party this past Sunday at Campbell's in the parlor room up there, and just had a great time. Joe Harris, if you don't know, but I think most people do here in the area, a standout athlete at Chelan High School, went on to play collegiately at the University of Virginia, and was the MVP of the ACC tournament in his senior year. He was an all-ACC selection, drafted in the second round by Cleveland in the NBA, went on, played a couple of years in Cleveland, has ended up in Brooklyn the last 3 years, now is a starter for the Nets, averaging a bit better than 13 points a game, and one of the top three-point shooters in the entire NBA, I might add, is near the top of that list. So we put a little group watch together at Campbell's, and folks came out, and we had some Brooklyn dogs and had some giveaway items. Thank you to the Harris family, as Joe provided some shirts, some autographed items, some wristbands, and a pair of, I think, worn one time sneakers, tennis shoes, game worn, that he wore in one of his games. And someone there was willing to pony up $100 for that, and that money, Steve, went to this campaign that Joe's been a part of, which is really cool, called Ballin' for Buckets, and it's to get clean water in areas of East Africa. And every time Joe made a three-point shot in the month of November, $200 he was contributing to that campaign as well. And he hits a lot of threes. So he had a site online. We had a story on this on our website at Lake Chelan Now. And so anyway, able to put a little more money into the coffers for his clean well water campaign.
He certainly has not forgotten community and his ability and his desire to return for camps locally and help the kids out here and there. And he's got some other stuff in the offing. I understand that he has not forgotten his hometown roots. How's that?
Absolutely. Good way to put it. All right. Well, there's kind of an elongated intro, actually, to Making Waves this week. But we're going to pause for the cause here for a moment. And when we come back, we'll talk to the head of the DNR for the state of Washington and the Public Lands Commissioner, Hillary Franz, and get the lowdown on her budget requests and a whole lot more. That's next here on Making Waves on LakeChelanNow.com.
Did you know that Chelan Realty is the oldest real estate firm in the Lake Chelan Valley? The Higgins family has owned Chelan Realty since 1972, and nobody knows the local real estate market better. If you're looking to buy, they'll help you find and purchase the right home or property for your needs. If you're looking to sell real estate, Chelan Realty will help you price the home or property and put it on the market for a quick sale. Ask them about their free market analysis or find it on their website at chelanrealty.com.
I want to welcome in Hillary Franz here to LakeChelanNow.com. And Hillary, of course, heads up the Department of Natural Resources. And Hillary, you've been a busy person of late. I know traveling around, busy with a lot of meetings and busy using your social media to tweet out information that is important for the public to have access to. Let's go through some of the main things you've been involved with lately, and let's begin it with a recent request for $55 million wildfire and forest help budget. What's the latest on that, and how did you come up with that number?
Yeah, so this year, let me start first by this year was a pretty significant wildfire season. I think your community knows best how significant it was, but this year it proved to have the second worst wildfires on record with over 1,800 fires. It proved to be a challenging fire season, not only in the number of fires, but the fact that we were fighting fires in every corner of the state. 40% of our fires this year were west of the Cascades. And so we found ourselves not only fighting in every corner of the state, but having to do it with the same amount of resources, frankly, that we've had in the, over the last 10 years. It proved to be extremely challenging, not only in the context of how we distributed the equipment and our air assets to get on top of those fires and keep them small, but also in the context of our firefighters that literally were fighting fires from late March, early April, straight into October with no break. We found that while we were very effective in keeping 95% of our fires below 10 acres and also substantially decreasing the amount of acres burned this year, but even though we had a successful fire season and keeping them small and the damage down, only burning 350,000 acres, we found ourselves significantly challenged. And the reality is this fire season and the last few fire seasons, I think, are right now currently our norm. And so I put forward a significant budget request this coming session to the legislature. The session has not started. It'll start early January, but we've been out already talking with legislators and the governor about the importance of this ask. The ask is for $55 million. It is not only for wildfire suppression, but also forest health. And I can break it down for you if you'd like.
Okay, well, before we do that, I'm curious what the reaction you're getting at this point. I know you say, you know, obviously they go into session in January, but you've been out stumping, so to speak. What feedback are you getting, and how do you feel about the request, the possibility of it going through as requested?
We've been actually getting very good response to it. And largely, I think everybody realized this fire season how significant the fires were. We had many parts of our state had the worst air quality in the world for quite a bit of time. And I think there was an enormous amount of realization of how significant our forest health crisis is and how it's leading to these catastrophic wildfires that, frankly, took away most of our state's summer. We live for summers here in Washington State, as you know, because we have so many rainy snow days and gray cloudy days that when the sun is finally out in the summer, we relish it. And unfortunately, this year, most of our summer was filled with gray, smoky skies that made it difficult to breathe and certainly difficult to enjoy the summer. Many of the legislators are realizing that we have a significant forest health crisis in Washington State with 2.7 million acres of forest just in eastern Washington alone that are dying to disease, drought, insect infestation, and that if we don't get on top of reducing the fuel load and taking charge of the forest health crisis, we're only going to see more significant catastrophic fires.
Keep hearing about that fuel load. If this budget request comes through, how soon can we actually expect that there will be crews in working on lessening that fuel load?
So you can expect it immediately. In fact, we got $13 million in the last capital budget from the legislature as part of our partnership with the legislature in implementing our 20-year forest health plan that has us treating 70,000 acres a year for the next 20 years. The $13 million is getting, we are already putting that on the ground and have been doing forest health treatments in our high priority zones, places where the forest is in such bad condition and also close proximity to population centers. This upcoming request is a continuation of ensuring that we're building out our forest health program, that we're reducing those hazardous wildfire fuels and treating over 35,000 acres this coming year. It also helps us be able to support and provide resources to private landowners who have significant fuel load on their own land but may not have the resources. And not only does it threaten their homes, but it also threatens their neighborhoods and their communities.
Is some of that work being done here in North Central Washington, or will it be soon?
It is absolutely happening in North Central Washington. So we've already been doing those treatments, and I can get this specific details about the specific treatments. But if you go to our 20-year forest health plan, you'll see the areas that are in red that are the high priority zones. And those are the areas that we are treating first and foremost. And we have already mapped out specifically the treatments that need to happen for 2018, 2019, and 2020. So our request to the legislature on forest health ties directly to those specific treatments laid out in our 2019 and 2020 plan. In addition, I want to say, you know, I'm obviously here in D.C. right now, and I have been meeting with, yesterday I met with Undersecretary for Natural Resources Jim Hubbard to talk about our partnership with the federal government. Half of our 2.7 million acres of forest that are in poor health in eastern Washington are actually on federal lands. And we are very well aware that even if we are able to treat our state lands and our tribal and private lands, we will not be able to make a significant difference in reducing these catastrophic wildfires if we aren't also getting on top of our federal lands and treating them given their condition.
I know, Hillary, you've seen the USFS, the United States Forest Service report that recently came out on wildfire risk. It's been in the news a lot here in the North Central Washington area. Identifying communities at risk by wildfire, leading the way was Leavenworth at number one, Chelan number six, and then on down the line, Tenasket, Cashmere, Omak, Twist, Okanagan, and Winthrop were all in the top, you know, 15, 16, 17. So I'm guessing that's not a surprise, and that's one of the reasons that, for example, cleaning out fuel in areas, that's why this would be a target area.
That's exactly right. This wasn't a surprise, largely because of our 20-year forest health plan and the identification that we have done of the forests that are in the worst condition and also obviously close proximity to communities because we want to make sure our public is staying safe. The communities you just listed off that came out of the federal report directly match with our high priority zones for forest health treatments, and it's where we are leaning in and zeroing in on and going to work on those areas first and foremost and make them a priority. I think we've all been moved really sadly by the impacts of the California wildfires and the devastation down there, the loss of life, the heroism of our firefighters that are putting themselves in horrific, challenging, dangerous conditions. And, you know, as the leader of the Department of Natural Resources and the largest wildfire fighting team, my absolute number one priority is making sure our communities and our firefighters are safe, and that we do everything in our powers to prevent the kind of catastrophic fires we've seen down south coming here. And it starts with absolutely treating our forests to get them healthy and more resilient and protecting our communities. This year, we had 1,800 fires. And we burned about 350,000 acres. Now, that sounds an enormous amount of acres, but it's actually a significant reduction from 2015 fires, which I know you and your community will remember, where we had 1,750 fires in Washington State, largely in eastern Washington, and 1 million acres burned. We have been able to reduce by two-thirds the amount of acres burned, even when we had more fires. And it came as a result of really being able to focus in on how we fight fire and retrofit the way we were fighting fire. So the first thing we did is we leveraged our air assets. We got them on the fires quick and fast. Wenatchee is an example. When a fire was breathing down on a community there and we could have lost the neighborhood, we basically bombed the hell out of it with our air assets, got them on top of the fire. It enabled our hand crews to get in and contain that fire more quickly. And also protected our firefighters and our communities. In addition to that, we pre-positioned our equipment throughout the state of Washington in those key areas that we knew fires were going to be bad this season. And then the third thing we did is we've been training our local, state, and federal firefighters together as one team. So we are operating as one team, collaborating, coordinating, communicating before fire season even starts. These three things have been truly transformative in being able to reduce the damage and devastation of wildfires like we saw in 2015. And so my budget is directly related to that. So that coupled with the forest health resources and the work that we're doing to transform those forests to make them more resilient, not only on state land, but federal, tribal, and private as well, I think is what's going to change the trajectory of wildfire and forest health and our summers in the state of Washington. It's going to take some time, but I believe over the next 4 to 5 years, we're going to start to see a transformation based on this work.
You tweeted earlier that climate change poses a great threat to water, wildlife, and ways of life, and that you're developing some new plans and hope to implement some ideas related to climate adaptations. Can you just briefly let us know what that's going to entail?
Absolutely. So obviously, you know, one of the challenges we faced this year is 96% of our state was in a drought. We had 70 days in western Washington alone with no moisture, no water, and that's why the entire state was susceptible to fires and why we saw significant fires. We are clearly seeing a change in climate within our state, and it's having an impact not only on wildfires and forest health, but also on water resources for ag production, as well as the changing temperatures within our waters. And so our agency, as a steward and manager of 6 million acres of land in Washington State that generates over $325 million for the state's economy, believes we have a responsibility to not just be acting status quo, like that the world's not going to change and it's going to stay the same as it's been 20 years ago, but realizing the world is changing, our temperatures are changing, our climate's changing, our conditions are changing, and that if we're going to strengthen our economy, we have got to make a more resilient state through a more resilient landscape. And so we are in the process of developing, we've already done an assessment on the 6 million acres of land and the changes that we're already seeing and likely to continue to see over the next 20 years. And we are now developing a plan of how we manage and care for those lands to make sure they're still able to produce some of the finest wines and some of the finest beef, and be able to ensure we're able to manage and protect and provide some of the most valuable forests and timber products, and we're, as well as obviously our shellfish and our critical fisheries. And so we are developing that plan. We'll be laying it out in the coming year. The goal will be not only to be thinking about our responsibility as the manager of those 6 million acres, but the fact that those lands are in every single county of the state. And so we have ability of not only helping make sure the lands are more resilient, but how do we help communities be more resilient? And so in doing that, not only will we take care of the long-term social well-being of our community, but we will take care of the long-term economic well-being of our communities and our state, which is what our number one responsibility should be.
Hillary, with not everybody embracing the concept of climate change, is that a difficult message to try and get through, particularly at the federal level?
I would tell you, I don't think it is a difficult message to get through, because the reality is we're on the front lines of a changing climate, from the wildfires, from literally dealing with a flood in Okanagan County that we haven't seen a flood like that since 1973, to significant landslides that come with huge storm events, whether it's rain on snow or just solid rain. And I think everybody in the state of Washington sees a change that's happening. We don't need to sit here and dispute why it's happening. What we need to do is take action to make sure that we're taking all steps to protect the landscape and manage it in a way that's sustainable for the long-term economic, environmental, and social well-being of that land that provides for our communities, as you know, not only jobs, but the food and water we depend on for survival.
Well, Steve, our thanks to Hillary Franz, taking time out of a busy, busy schedule, I might add, to talk with us from Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, she warned me, said, I don't have a lot of time, I got to get out of here. And as you could hear, it did not stop her from hanging around and answering the questions. We're very appreciative.
And again, she is the profile of the Department of Natural Resources up to a new level, in my opinion, and it will pay dividends.
I believe you are correct. So we thank you for tuning in to the program once again here on LakeChelanNow.com. We certainly, Steve, I know we want to wish Merry Christmas to everybody. And you and I, we are hoping.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. You and I are hoping that we can maybe sneak in a visit yet this month, in the month of December, with Santa Claus. We're working on that.
Looking forward to it.
All right. For now, so long for
Steve Bikewist, Dennis Rahm, and we are making waves.
Catch you next time.